Wednesday, January 6, 2016, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, right around noon, Mountain Standard Time. Try to bring you a unique outlook on the world of sports than you're going to get anywhere else. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or pretty much anywhere that podcasts are hosted, or you can go over to our website. Check it out there. We put up new articles every week, and we always put a link to the podcast on there where you can listen to it. Check out our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. If you would like to contact the show for any reason, got a question, got a comment, you need some advice, you know we're always here to help. We will always try to answer your questions in a timely manner. We'll always respond to your emails. I'll always shoot you an answer back. And if it's something that's, you know, kind of interesting, we might have to talk about it on the show. You can email us anytime that you would like to. Shoot us an email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. And if you need us to leave your name anonymous, we are not, you know, we're not above doing that kind of thing. We're not afraid. We've had some interesting emails that we get every once in a while, and we're every once in a while we'll read them on the air, and we'll talk about some of those things. You can also like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter as well. Daily Dose Sports, D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. You can find us on both of those places. Today on the show, I've got a couple things for you. Want to talk some college football. Want to talk some winners and losers in the college football bowl season. We're going to give you a brief college football national championship preview. Also, I've told you in the past, there are certain people in this world that I kind of rely on, that I kind of count on, that I kind of, you know, I get their opinions on things. I'm going to talk to them about some sport things. There are certain people that I kind of rely on that are kind of in the Daily Dose support group. Are they employees? I don't know if they're employees. They're not employees because I'm not paying them. I know that. But one of the callers that we used to have back in the day, Mike from Castle Rock, used to call the Daily Dose radio show back in the day. Mike's going to come on the show, and we're going to talk some NFL. Mike's a smart guy. Mike seriously is one of those guys that I can talk sports with, and I could probably say, hey, so Mike, who do you like in the NHL this year out east? You know, who's the best team? Well, here's the guy. He's just a smart guy. He's the guy that gets it. We're going to talk some NFL. NFL playoffs are coming up this weekend. Plus, as we always do, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to miss that. You always got to stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know where that's going to go. It is our very first show of 2016. Very first show of 2016. I hope that everyone out there had a safe and happy New Year celebration. I'm going to be honest with you. I've already broken most all of my New Year resolutions that I made. And be honest, you have to. We know how that goes. We know how that goes. But you know, I do want to try to make 2016 an exceptional year. I really do. And I realize it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. You know, every year, it seems like on New Year's Eve, we kind of get deep. And we get kind of reflective. And we think about all the ways that we want to improve ourselves. Usually it's physically, let's be honest. Usually it's, I'm going to start eating better. I'm going to start drinking so much. I'm going to you know, start exercising. But we also sometimes get in that mode where it's like, yeah, I'm going to try to improve physically. But I'm also going to try to improve emotionally. Sometimes even spiritually. Depending maybe on how much you had to drink on New Year's Eve. You might start, you know, going in the spiritual mode. When, let's be honest, I don't know what difference like a minute or an hour makes. All of a sudden we're going to make these drastic changes. In reality, we're probably just going to spend most of our time watching like videos of people hurting themselves on YouTube while we sit there and like eat microwave pizza rolls. But it's tough to make changes. It's hard. It's not easy to make changes. And you can sit there acting like you're above this sort of thing. Like, you're like, I don't sit there watching YouTube videos. What are you talking about? That's not me. My life's actually pretty good. I've got things together. Maybe that's you, but I'm not a train wreck. But, really? Are you sure about that? Because I'll bet you, like, have a favorite Kardashian, don't you? See, you have problems, too. You got problems, too. You're just as bad as the rest of us. It's okay. We all do. Here's my word of caution to you. Here's the thing that concerns me. 2016 is going to be a tough year. It's going to be a tough year. I'm telling you right now, I'm not saying, and I'm certainly not wishing anything bad, but it's going to be tough because 2016 is an election year. We're already starting to get bombarded with this garbage. We have another 11 months to go before the election? I mean, let's be honest. When 2016 is over, we're going to all need like that boiling bleach Clorox shower to clean ourselves off from the mess that we're going to be hearing for going into 2017. Because have you seen these candidates? Have you seen the candidates we have? I don't care what side you're on. I don't care if you're conservative. I don't care if you're liberal. I don't care. I hate stupid people all equally. So it makes no difference to me. But here's the thing that I struggle with. When I look at some of, you know, the polls that we have out and some of the candidates that we have, this is a great country. Like, we have a lot of highly intelligent people in the United States of America. Are you really telling me this is the best and the brightest we have? These are like the smartest candidates we have? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm looking at these candidates and I'm like, this seems like this would be maybe some of the worst candidates. You're telling us these are the best? This is who we have to vote for? We don't have anyone else? It's like finding out you're the owner of like a really proud franchise. It's like finding out you're the owner of, say, like the Dallas Cowboys. And you have this proud, prestigious franchise. You have this history of winning. You have this history of America's team. And the best quarterbacks you can actually get are Matt Cassel and Kellen Moore. Are you kidding me? Okay, maybe that's a bad example. We've got to jump in because we've got a lot of things to get to, and I want to get to Mike. A couple things coming out in the world of breaking news. One story coming out. We talked a little bit about this last week when it was discussed. You know, Al Jazeera had named a few people in this HGH kind of ring that was going through this clinic getting HGH. They named Peyton Manning as one of the people. A couple of the other people they named was Ryan Zimmerman, Washington Nationals first baseman, and Philadelphia Phillies first baseman Ryan Howard. Those two, Zimmerman and Howard, have now filed lawsuits against Al Jazeera. They reported in a documentary. That those two guys, along with, you know, like I said, Peyton Manning and a few other athletes, were receiving shipments of performance-enhancing drugs. On Tuesday, Zimmerman and Howard claimed that Al Jazeera, that report that they had, it's called The Dark Side, was the report that the statements they issued were inaccurate, that they were false, and that they are suing them for general and punitive damages. Going to be interesting to keep an eye on this story. Because we did hear about this. It was kind of thrown out there. Oh, yeah, Peyton Manning was involved in HGH. And then it was, well, actually, it was just his wife. And actually, the guy who said it doesn't work here. And actually, he didn't work here at the time. And they've kind of backtracked. Now we've got a lawsuit going on. I told you last week this is going to be an interesting story to keep an eye on. Continue to keep an eye on this one. St. Louis Rams owner, Stan Kroenke, they are starting to look at Los Angeles as their destination where the Rams are going to go. That's not news. I told you that probably 3 years ago. The news now, though, is that the Rams may go, the Raiders may go, and the Chargers may go. This is going to be discussed next week. And now, not just one team, not just two teams, now they're talking about three teams may go to LA. I don't know exactly how that works. I don't know if one of them is going to get dropped, but this is something I want to keep an eye on. And I believe next week they're going to meet with the city and kind of start talking about some of these things. They're going to start meeting with the league and seeing if they can discuss how exactly they go about this. It's not quite as easy as you might think. There's a number of things that they're going to have to, a number of hoops they got to jump through to get a team in LA, but it is certainly looking like there is going to be football in Los Angeles very, very soon. A little bit of news in baseball. The Kansas City Royals agreed to a 4-year, $72 million deal with outfielder Alex Gordon. There were a number of teams that were interested in Gordon. And, you know, Gordon was injured last year. He had a few things where he missed some time last year. But there were a number of people that looked at him as it could be key. Royals found a way to keep him. Seems like we're sure seeing a lot of money thrown around in baseball. Seems like baseball throws around money more than any other sport. Last thing I want to touch on. And you might have seen this. The Cleveland Browns have hired Paul DePodesta to come in and be the chief strategy officer of the Cleveland Browns. Now, if you don't know Paul DePodesta, this is a guy that kind of has built the Oakland A's. He was the guy, if you saw the movie Moneyball, He was the guy that Jonah Hill's character was based on. He's one of these guys that's into the analytics, and that's kind of his whole approach is we're going to go things by analytics, and we're going to build a team that way instead of, you know, watching games and stuff. He's been a little bit responsible for helping turn around the New York Mets. Now, the Cleveland Browns have brought him in, and they say sport is not important. It doesn't matter. This is a guy who understands how to build a team. This is a guy who understands how to put a team together. And because of that, we feel like this is a guy that can come in and turn around the Browns. Here's my only caution with this. Yes, I think you probably could find a guy that could come in and do those kinds of things. Here is my concern. It's the Browns. It's the Cleveland Browns. So anything they do is probably stupid just right off the bat. So you can sit there and say, well, no, this actually makes a lot of sense. Maybe, but it's the Browns. So right off the bat, I've got to be skeptical because I know the Browns and they like hire a new coach every year and they're always doing stupid things. So I can't look at this and just say, well, yeah, across the board, this just looks smart. It's the Browns. It's probably stupid somehow. We got a lot of things to get to. Got a lot of things to get through today, because I do want to talk to Mike about the NFL. A lot of things, you know, in the NFL I want to talk about. College football. I want to talk some winners and losers in college football, but before I get to that, can I just say for the record, the bowl games have been terrible. There have been 40 bowl games that have been played so far. We still have the championship game still go next Monday. Do you realize that 27 of those games have ended with more than a 7-point difference? So at the end of the game, we already kind of, not like a close finish. I mean, there's been a couple, not many close games though, a lot of blowouts. I don't know if it's the long layoff, you know, between the regular season and these games. Maybe it's just because too many teams just aren't invested. They don't care if they win or not. They're just there to party for the bowl game. I don't know what it is, but like the bowl games have been terrible. There have been very, very few. The two playoff games were horrible. One was good for a half. One was good for like a 5 minutes. Just not very good games. Not very good games. Remember what I said last week? I said last week, the New Year's Eve schedule was just completely asinine. It didn't make any sense to schedule those games on New Year's Eve. Well, the numbers came out this week. And hey, I don't know how, but it looks like this bumpkin from Colorado actually got something right, because viewership was down on those games 36% from last year. Over a third less people watch these games. And here's the thing. I want you to think about that. They put this game on New Year's Eve. They had New Year's Eve was on Thursday. You could have made them on New Year's Day on Friday. Okay. You could have made them the day after on Saturday and owned the entire day. There were no NFL games. There was nothing else to watch. You could have owned Saturday if you'd have put the games there. You probably would have had huge numbers. Once again, the NCAA is one of the stupidest entities in all of sports. And when I don't even know if it's sports. It's in anything. They're just dumb. It doesn't make any sense to do things like that. And here's the worst thing. It's on New Year's Eve. People are going out. People are partying. People are going to do their thing. And I told you last week, a lot of people were working on New Year's Eve. That early game that started at 2:00 Mountain Standard Time, there were people still finishing up their jobs until 5:00. So they weren't even done yet. It didn't make any sense. But here's the thing. Does the NCAA look at that and say, oh, okay, well, we'll have to change that next year? You know what they said afterward? They said, not, hey, we made a mistake. Not, oh, well, we need to change that next year. Do you know what they said? These idiots have the nerve to say, well, we're just going to have to change people's viewing habits. Is there any more denial than that? Not, well, we might want to rethink that, or we're just going to have to change people's viewing habits. I've got news for you. If it's New Year's Eve, people are going out. They're not going to stick around and watch Alabama and Michigan State. Unless you're a fan of that team, no one cares. Unbelievable. Just so stupid. Sometimes people just can't get out of their own way, and that's a prime example. The NCAA, it doesn't matter if they're talking about if kids can have cream cheese on their bagel or when to schedule a game. They always seem to do the dumbest thing. Unbelievable. Let's move on to some winners and losers in college football, because we did have some winners and losers. First winner I want to talk about, got to be Stanford's Christian McCaffrey. Did you see the Rose Bowl? It was the Christian McCaffrey show. Christian McCaffrey has 18 carries for 172 yards. That's almost 10 yards a carry. Not done. He also had four catches for 105 yards and a touchdown, and he had a 63-yard punt return for a touchdown. He also had a long, I think it was a run, for a touchdown that was called back on a penalty. Stanford crushed Iowa 45-16 in the Rose Bowl. McCaffrey showed some of those East Coast Heisman voters, you probably made a mistake in not voting for me. Because I think it's pretty clear McCaffrey was probably the most outstanding player in college football this year. He is going to be the Heisman frontrunner next year coming into the season. Here's the only problem. That means absolutely nothing at all. Because who are the Heisman favorites going into this season? Trevon Boykin? Nick Chubb? I don't even know. The favorites rarely win it. I don't know why it works that way, but it seems like it works that way. But Christian McCaffrey had a phenomenal day this past week. Let me give you a loser. And this one's a little personal, I won't lie. The state of Colorado was a big loser in the bowl games. First off, Air Force lost 55-36 to Cal in the Armed Forces Bowl. Okay, but it's Air Force. I mean, they're a service academy. They shouldn't even make a bowl game. So there's not that much expected from them, but they did lose their game. Colorado State lost to Nevada in the Arizona Bowl 28-23. Now, I know, Colorado State fans, I get it. We always have to hear about how competitive they were, in case you didn't, you know, we were in a bowl game, in case you didn't know. They always want a ribbon for everything they do. I don't know if that's just the little brother kind of thing, but anytime Colorado State, they make a bowl game, but they get beat, well, at least we're in a bowl game, or like they play Colorado and they get beat, well, at least it was a close game. I don't know. It's very, very bizarre. We played all 13 games this year. Yeah, so did 79 other teams. It's not that impressive. Put your flag down. That's just kind of a Colorado State thing. But here's the worst thing. In a world in which there are 80 teams getting bowl games, the University of Colorado was the biggest loser. They couldn't even get a bowl game. CU went 4-9. They went 1-8 in the Pac-12. They couldn't even get a bowl game. If you don't live here, you might be sitting there saying, yeah, big deal. Who cares? No one expects anything from Colorado. They're horrible. Yeah, I know. But here's the thing. Here in Colorado, we have to hear every single year how this is finally the year Colorado's going to get a good bowl game. And this is finally the year that maybe CSU is going to compete for a top 25. And this is, shut up. College football in Colorado is horrible. It is abysmal. They should probably just get rid of it and do something else. Winner. I'm going to give you a winner that you might not expect. Remember we talked about the 5-7 teams getting in and how stupid it is? Because in order to fill out 80 teams in bowl games, the NCAA actually had to break their own rule and allow teams with losing records to have a bowl game. Because remember, everybody gets a ribbon. Everybody gets a hug. It's pathetic. But the 5-7 teams actually did pretty good. They probably got sick of hearing about it. 5-7 Minnesota beat Central Michigan in the Quick Lane Bowl, whatever that is. 5-7 San Jose State beat Georgia State in the Auto Nation Cure Bowl. Again, I don't know what that is. And then, probably the most impressive of them all, 5-7 Nebraska beat UCLA in the Foster Farms Bowl. I think maybe that used to be the Independence Bowl. I don't know. Used to be something that wasn't quite as stupid of a name. Anyways, all the 5-7 teams won. Prime example, I think, of when you can be like a winner and still, let's be honest, kind of be a loser. Nice job, 5-7 teams. Here's a loser. The Final Four playoff. We just talked about it. Clemson crushes Oklahoma 37-17 in the Orange Bowl. It was interesting for a half. I thought that was going to be a great game. Halftime, it kind of was the end. And then Alabama beats Michigan 38-0. And then nobody watched. And the games were horrible. And it was a complete disaster. After as good as it was last year, it was just as bad this year. Final Four playoff wasn't very good. Here's a winner for you, though. College football next year. Do you realize that many of the top players this year are going to be back? Let me give you a few. We talked about Christian McCaffrey. He'll be back next year. LSU running back Leonard Fournette. Florida State running back Dalvin Cook. Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson. Ohio State's JT Barrett. They're all going to be back. Not because they want to, but because they have to be. And as a result, we're going to have some pretty good college football next year. College football next year should be really, really fun. We're going to have some really good players and some really good teams next year. Our final loser. I got to give it to the Big Ten Conference. I know Big Ten. You went 5-5 in bowl games. It wasn't that you lost, though. It was the way that you lost. Michigan State getting beat 38-0 to Alabama. Northwestern getting beat 45-6 to Tennessee. And Iowa getting crushed 45-16 by Stanford. Remember 2 years ago when it was like the Big Ten just kept getting blown out in big games? Well, it's back, actually. It's actually back. Let's jump over to our national championship preview because we've got to get to that really, really quickly. Monday night. Number 2 Alabama versus number 1 Clemson. Should be an interesting game. I think. I thought these last games were going to be good. I don't know. I suppose I could break down the matchup and give you some stats and like maybe talk about third down conversion rates and yards per pass. And I don't really feel like doing that. I'm going to be honest. I don't feel like doing that. We're going to give you a Daily Dose National Championship preview instead. Here's a couple things I want you to think about going into this game. Who has the bigger nerd for a quarterback? Bigger nerd. I think Alabama actually wins this. Yes, Deshaun Watson for Clemson kind of looks like he could probably win like a geography bee. Like he has that look about him, like he's just kind of a huge geek. But Alabama quarterback Jake Hoker, he's going to single-handedly keep, proactive in business. That poor kid's face looks like a coffee cake. I'm going to give the advantage on nerdiest quarterback to Alabama. Slight advantage. It's not huge, but I'm going to go Alabama on that advantage. Most annoying coach. That's a tough one because Alabama's Nick Saban actually might be Satan himself, but I got to be honest. I'm getting really kind of tired of Dabo Sweeney. Like, he's like this little Barney Fife running around telling everybody how we never get any respect. We just never get any respect. Do you realize you were the only team voted number one by the College Football Playoff poll all season? Clemson is the only number one team we had in the poll the entire season. Shut up, Dabo. We're tired of hearing about you. I'm going to give most annoying coach to Clemson. So it's tight. What else could we rate here? How about arrests, citations, or like, you know, legal charges? Alabama has 6 arrests this season. Clemson has 3. Now, that sounds like a blowout. I mean, Alabama's doubling you up there, 6-3. But here's the thing. Alabama mostly has DUIs and third-degree assaults, which, don't get me wrong. I mean, they have their own place. But Clemson has a cocaine charge and a financial fraud charge. So, I mean, Bama wins this. But it's not a blowout. I mean, it's closer than what you think. All right. Here's my final thing. This is what it comes down to for me. Who has the most annoying fan base? And this to me is a blowout for Alabama. Here's your typical Alabama fan. And I'm sorry if you're an Alabama fan. Mostly I'm sorry because this actually is going to paint a picture of you. You have 36-year-old grandfathers wearing the houndstooth hats with their jean shorts and their roll tied tank tops because the houndstooth hat, it kind of makes it classier. This 36-year-old grandpa dropped out of school at 13 to support his son, and he's doing pretty well in life. I'm going to be honest. He's managed to save enough money to decorate his trailer in crimson Christmas lights all year round that he leaves it up. Alabama wins. I expect Clemson to keep this game close. I expect Clemson maybe to even lead this game at some point. I was really, really impressed with Clemson's front four. I knew they had offense. I knew they had some playmakers. I knew Deshaun Watson was pretty solid. I was really impressed with Clemson's front four. I just think Bama has too much. I'm going to go with Bama winning, but I think it'll be a close game. Should be very, very interesting game to keep an eye on Monday night. We are joined right now on the Daily Dose Hotline by friend of the show. And, this guy was a caller to the Daily Dose radio show back in the day. Very, very smart guy. There's not many people that I actually respect their opinion on, but this is one of those guys. Mike from Castle Rock is joining us here on the Daily Dose to talk some NFL playoffs. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it.
Glad to be on, Clint. Thank you.
The NFL regular season is over. We're finally finished. We're down to the playoffs. We've got some wild card matchups that we're gonna discuss and make our picks on and give you some insight on some of those games. But I wanted to talk about a few stories first before we get to those. We've also got some coaching vacancies we've got to talk about. There's a few names getting thrown around that I think are interesting. Mike, the first thing I want to talk about, New England Patriots. The New England Patriots lost back-to-back games to drop out of the top seat. When we looked at this schedule and we said, okay, they've got the Jets and the Dolphins. Okay, that's cake. They're going to win both of those games. They lose back-to-back games. Now, as bizarre as that is, that's not actually what I want to talk about. I've actually heard a few people in the national media, and of course some of the Patriot honks that are out there saying the Patriots did this on purpose.
I've heard the same thing. I can't imagine a scenario where you would, on purpose, lower your ranking in the playoffs.
Well, and their thing is they say the Patriots don't mind going on the road. They've played well on the road. They've gone to Super Bowls having been on the road the whole time, so they don't mind that. He just wants to get his guys healthy, and so this was all just a clever ruse by Bill Belichick. Hey, I'll be honest. I think Bill Belichick is one of the smartest coaches out there. I do think sometimes he outcoaches himself. This isn't on purpose. If this is on purpose, here's a couple problems. One problem, you've lost four of your last six, and in those last two losses, Tom Brady got his head knocked off a few times. So if that was all part of your clever scheme, nice job almost getting your quarterback killed.
True. And of the last six, I mean, you're talking about being comfortable on the road. Three of the four losses were on the road.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense. You never know. I mean, you look at the season last year when they started so terribly and everybody said they're done and everybody said Brady's done and Belichick needs to go away. And I think this is a little bit different, though. You don't have an entire preseason or an entire regular season to get healthy.
Right. And you know, the thing that I look at is when you see the injuries that they've had, and we continue to hear again and again about how the Patriots just plug new guys in. You can plug in running backs and you can plug in wide receivers. You can't plug in offensive linemen. And that's what we're starting to see now. We're starting to see them being completely unable to protect Tom Brady. In these last two games, he took another 11 hits. And that one against the Jets, I seriously thought Brady might have been done.
Well, and he got bent like a Gumby doll against the Dolphins a couple times, too, and you know, left the game limping. So there's definitely an issue there. They threw the ball all of, what, a half a dozen times in the first half?
Yeah.
By scheme, on purpose, obviously, but, you know, there's only so much you can do to hide your deficiencies. But as much as I hate to say this, he's clever like a fox. I don't know what the end game is here. You know, we'll find out in a week and a half when somebody goes to New England, and chances are whoever goes there is going to have a stellar defense.
Yeah, you would think so. You know, Brady has been sacked 38 times this year, and I don't think that number is nearly as revealing as the number of times he's been hit. He's been hit well over 100 times. Going to be interesting. Here's the one thing I wonder about. Remember when we were coming into the season, and we were, you know, all the Deflategate stuff and you know, what the NFL was doing to these guys. Remember how angry the Patriots were? Like, they were going to be really, really angry this year. Like, they were going to play mad, and they were going to be so mad about Deflategate, it was going to be a revenge thing. Are they still, mad? Because it doesn't seem like they're as mad these last couple weeks.
No. They can only be mad at themselves, to be honest with you. There were people that, once the suspension got overturned, you know, people were saying, you know, look what happened the last time. It was the Patriots versus the world. They went
right,
you know, undefeated all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
So
it's funny how those emotions
Brady,
wear
though,
off.
You put an average quarterback in there, even a, you know, not a top two or three quarterback in there, and sure, they're so far away from the playoffs, it's not even funny.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to compete. I give Brady a ton of credit, and I give him credit for his toughness because of the number of times he's been hit and he still stands in there. Some interesting things going on in New England. They're going to be a fun story to watch. I still think they are extremely dangerous just because they've been there and they know what it takes to get there. I think they have some serious, serious flaws with that team. The only thing is I look at the rest of the AFC and everybody has flaws. So, I mean, I don't know if it matters.
The AFC might be as wide open as I remember it.
Yeah, there's no clear-cut
for
favorite.
For a really long time.
Sure.
It's incredible, the diversity of the teams. You look at the starting quarterbacks of a good portion of these teams. It's amazing how wide open. There's a lot of people, you know, saying that the two wild card teams are the best teams in the AFC.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You look at these teams, and you're sitting there going, the two, I don't want to say hottest because Pittsburgh, with that loss to Baltimore and just about losing again, I don't want to say they're the hottest, but they're two of the hottest teams, I guess. Kansas City, I want to talk about Kansas City here in just a few minutes. A couple of the stories I want to get to real quick while we have Mike. The New York Jets. The New York Jets just had to beat the 7-8 Buffalo Bills, and they would have clinched a playoff spot. Remember back at the beginning of the season, I had talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I had said, I know that he's better than Geno Smith, but here's my concern for Ryan Fitzpatrick. When the game is on the line and you're in a clutch situation, he has a tendency to throw the ball to the wrong team. And on Sunday, in the biggest of moments, he threw three straight picks on the Jets' three final drives.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Jets just couldn't get out of their own way. I can't even imagine what it's like back there in New York right now with what the Jets did and then with what the Giants did with Coughlin.
The New York media is having a field day out there. It's crazy. We've been in the same situation here.
Right.
Just win on the final week and you're in. And, you know, things just don't come together. That's the thing I like about the NFL. You know, there's the expression, any given Sunday, any two given teams.
No, but it's totally true. It's totally true. It can happen any week, and you just don't know. The Bills, who have literally nothing to play for, somehow come out and find a way to get a win. I thought it was interesting, though, that once again, I mean, this has happened before, once again, Rex Ryan keeps the Jets out of the playoffs. I mean, he did it. He did it for all those years when he was there. Now he's still doing it. Pretty impressive for Rex. And the great thing about it is we won't have to hear him, you know, pat himself on the back all offseason because he's just not that guy.
It just goes to show you what, is it a coaching thing? Is it a leadership thing? I don't know, but the Bills were more motivated than the Jets.
Well, they were, which is, I mean, I guess I don't understand some of these teams, how you can't get yourself prepared to play. And I know a lot of times that comes down on the coach, but at some point I look at the players and say, why aren't you ready to go? I thought the same thing on Sunday with Denver. Let's talk a little bit.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, let's talk about Denver. Because the Broncos somehow, but I'll be honest, I still don't know how, the Broncos have somehow found a way to get the number one seed in the AFC with the Patriots losing. Denver, all they had to do was beat the 4-11 San Diego Chargers on Sunday. When you have a team like the Chargers, when you have a team, they have all this internal issue. They might be moving. They've been horrible. They have all these injuries. They have a situation where players and management are having these disagreements. All this. All you have to do is give the Chargers a reason to quit, and they would have quit. The Broncos wouldn't give them a reason to quit. In fact, they gave them five reasons not to quit, turning the ball over five times on Sunday.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You turn the ball over five times, you still manage to win. You're talking about giving them a reason to quit. You score in two plays. They punt right away, and you're going down to score again, and then, you know, Sanders fumble. Kind of stopped the momentum train there, and it was just a comedy of errors for the rest of the game. So,
well, it was so bizarre. The only thing that I kept thinking is they've turned it over, you know, three times, four times, five times, but the score is 13-7 San Diego after the fifth turnover, and I'm going, they still haven't done anything with any of these turnovers.
Right.
Like if Denver just put anything together, they're still going to win this game. So Broncos coach Gary Kubiak, I think he felt the season was getting away. And I think if you lose that game on Sunday, I think your season, I hate to say, your season might be over. Because I don't know if you bounce back from losing to the Chargers at home. It might have been desperation. I don't know. But he goes to Peyton Manning, pulls Brock Osweiler. I didn't think Brock Osweiler was horrible. But the offense wasn't getting the job done. Did you agree with the move to pull Osweiler at the time?
You know, and it wasn't a knock on Osweiler. It wasn't Osweiler. Of those five turnovers, one really was his fault. He should have checked for the extra protection for the blindside blitzer.
Got blindsided and fumbled. Yeah, that's the one. And that's the one that I don't think takes place if Peyton's in there. But the rest of them aren't his fault. You're right.
They are not his fault. The interceptions were tipped.
Yep, through somebody's hands.
The fumbles he has nothing to do with. The team just was not motivated. It was they needed a spark.
That's exactly what they needed.
You know, you look at the Kansas City game, Manning was just awful. It probably the worst game of his career.
Sure.
The game was over way too late. Kubiak makes a switch. They get a little bit of a spark.
A little bit, yeah.
And it, you know, keep us from being shut out.
Right, because they had been up to that point.
So, don't know. It makes me question a little bit. Why does the team need a spark?
That was my biggest question. Why are you needing a spark when you have everything to play for? You can clinch home field advantage, the top seed throughout, and for some reason, you guys keep putting the ball on the ground. I mean, for some reason, your offense just can't quite figure out how to hold on to the ball. It was odd, and I hate to say it, I really did feel like it was a little bit of a desperation move by Kubiak, because let's say Manning goes in there and throws a pick six. Your season's over. You can burn the stadium down because the season is over.
Yeah.
I mean, just bizarre. Now, I believe you were at the game, weren't you?
Yes.
Let me ask you this. Because you're at the game. You were at the Kansas City game when they benched Manning. Were the same people that were booing him at the Kansas City game screaming, "Here's our savior," in this game?
Absolutely. Well, it's what have you done for me lately?
Yes. God, fans.
That is absolutely correct. It's there's an expression, the favorite player on an NFL team is a backup quarterback.
Sure.
And Sunday that just happened to be a Hall of Famer.
I was live tweeting the game, and I actually had posted at that time, hey, the same people that were booing this guy a few weeks ago, that's not how they were treating him on Sunday. It was a little bit different. It's just so bizarre to me. I mean, Kubiak had to shake things up. There's no question about that. I do think he felt like the season was getting away, and that if they lose that game, they are going to Houston this week on a down note and very, very banged up injury-wise. So I do think he looked at it and said, hey, we kind of have to do something here, because if we don't, we're going to get ourselves in some pretty big trouble. Here, I guess, is the question now. And I've had a number of people ask me this. What does Kubiak do now?
That is the topic of conversation in these parts.
Yes, yes it is.
And you've got so many people making good arguments both ways.
Right. Here's my first answer.
Temperature of the team. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if you can do that.
The team got a spark. They blocked better. They ran harder. They held onto the ball when Manning was in there.
Well, I don't think anyone dared make that mistake with Manning on the field in his comeback. I think they were scared to death. There's no way I'm putting this ball on the ground with Peyton Manning in here doing something that probably is a little bit historic. There's no way I'm going to be the guy that makes a mistake.
Does it make a difference who comes here next week? As far as who we
Well, start? With the pass rush that the Texans have, maybe, but Kansas City's pass rush is nasty in their own right, so I don't know if it does. Here's one thing that I would say Gary Kubiak should say. When they ask him who your quarterback is, he should say, I don't know. And he should say that literally until they take the field on Sunday and they take their first offensive series, and I would even split one of them out at wide receiver just to keep the other team off balance, because I'm not telling you nothing. You don't need to know anything.
I agree. Because you do have to plan differently for either quarterback.
Yes, I wouldn't tell anything. That's like asking where our troops are located in Iraq. I'm not telling you nothing. I'm not giving you any help.
There's some gamesmanship there, but this is why Kubiak was brought here, to make the correct decisions as a head coach. So it's going to be an interesting decision, and I would be surprised if he does make an announcement, this is my starting quarterback, before the game.
Yeah, I absolutely would not. There's no way. I'm not going to give you that inside look. Okay, biggest question, and then we're going to move on to a couple other things. Who should he start? Did we lose you?
Yeah, no. I'm pulling out a quarter here to flip it.
Right,
you
exactly.
Know, I got to be honest with you. I'm 51-49. That is such a tough decision. You've got Brock, who played very well the last 6 weeks. Each quarterback has their strengths against the pass rush. And what I mean by that is Manning gets rid of the ball a lot quicker.
Sure.
But Brock is mobile.
He can at least get away from a pass rush.
I have yet to see him self-sack.
Right, right.
He does stand tall in the pocket. He takes some hits. Based on this year, I think you got to start Brock.
You go with Brock.
You got to go with Brock.
Here's my biggest question, and I've said this the entire time. Manning has the experience. Manning's the veteran. Manning has playoff experience. My biggest question has always been, going back to even to last season, is he truly healthy? If he's not truly healthy, I don't want him out there. If he comes in, that's the thing. If he comes in spot duty, like he did this last week, I get that. Because Brock's struggling and he comes in spot, I understand that. But if he's not truly 100% healthy, then I don't want him out there because we've seen how ineffective that he can be. Let me ask you this. If you start Peyton, can you bring in Brock as a replacement?
You have no choice.
If you start Brock, can you bring in Peyton as a replacement?
Easily.
Is that then the thing? I'm going to start whoever I want to start because I know it's going to be a short leash and I can go to either one of these guys. And maybe that's what he does. I don't know.
And it's an interesting decision, too. I mean, obviously, clearly he waited way too late to pull him against Kansas City.
Right. He couldn't even function. He wasn't even able to compete.
But, you know, he only threw, what, 7 passes on Sunday. But, you know, his adrenaline was flowing. He was as mad as can be. I can't believe I'm a backup. His ball had the tightest spiral and the most zip I've seen on it.
And he did all year. Yeah, he did. He threw, I think, 2 deep outs, and it might have both been to Demaryius, maybe one to Emmanuel Sanders. But they had a little more zip on him, and some of that was because he had time to step up and step into his throw. Some of that was maybe he's a little healthier now than he has been.
That's possible. It's, you know, way back at the beginning of the season, there were so many people that were talking. You know what? Elway missed how many games in our Super Bowl season?
That second one, he missed a ton.
Okay. Still got to the Super Bowl.
Sure.
Elway got healthy.
Yep.
Why don't we sit Manning a few games? And, it was due to unforeseen circumstances, but there was always talk about resting Manning.
Well, and
he faded so much at the end of last season. So,
and they said it was just from that quad injury or whatever, but he literally got to the point where he couldn't compete anymore, which is what we saw earlier this season when he was that fit. He doesn't have much physicality as it is. If you take what little he has, he's completely ineffective. A couple coaching vacancies I want to talk about just real briefly. Miami Dolphins are, of course, looking for a coach. They had the interim head coach. The New York Giants, they get rid of Tom Coughlin. It was interesting. I don't know if anybody saw the press conference. He refused to shake ownership's hand when he resigned. We put resigned in quotation marks.
Air quotes, yes.
The Cleveland Browns are looking for a head coach. They get rid of Mike Pettine after just a fiasco they've had back in Cleveland. The Tennessee Titans looking for a head coach. San Francisco 49ers and the Philadelphia Eagles. All these guys are looking for head coaches. I'm going to throw out a couple names for you, and I want to see what you think. San Francisco 49ers, would you take Mike Shanahan or Adam Gase? And think of the quarterback situation they have back there, because do you give up on Colin Kaepernick, or do you still have anything invested in him?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because in the middle of the season, everybody is saying, well, Kaepernick's played his last down for the 49ers.
Sure.
Now all of a sudden that's on a 180 and saying he's definitely being back next year. It's all hearsay and you know, guessing, but honestly, I go with the pedigree.
I would too. And why do I have a feeling that Mike Shanahan would go back there and revive his career? He's pretty quarterback friendly.
Yep.
No, I could totally see that. Tennessee Titans, if you're Tennessee, first off, no one even cares that you even have a franchise. Like, the people that are at the games, I don't even know if they're watching the field. If I'm Tennessee, I go after Chip Kelly, we're going to reunite him and Marcus Mariota, and we're going to have at least something interesting. My concern is Chip Kelly's quarterbacks have a history of getting just beat up. That's my concern. But if I'm Tennessee, you don't have any life in that building. You might as well get some.
That would definitely bring some excitement to that football team.
Sure. I mean,
absolutely.
There's nothing to watch with that team. You can't name one player beside Marcus Mariota.
Well, and, you know, Mariota had a pretty decent year.
Yes, he did. I liked what I saw out of that kid.
It's a good fit. I like it. I don't think Kelly's going to be without a job very long.
No, I don't think he will either. Another job that he's being mentioned for, at least, is the Cleveland job. Now, there's some discussion. There's some talk that over the weekend, Johnny Manziel was in Las Vegas instead of preparing to be a backup or at least be on the sideline for the game because he was going through concussion protocol. Johnny Manziel has basically completely bailed on this Cleveland team. Is Johnny Manziel enough of a reason to scare coaches away from the Cleveland job?
I don't think he's a Brown next year, regardless of who's coaching.
Yeah, probably not. This kid's an idiot.
Maybe
it's just he has a drinking problem. I don't know what it is, but he just makes horrible decisions.
He's just immature. I mean, you know, he said the right things earlier in the year after that, you know, fiasco that he went through.
And, right.
It just doesn't learn. He doesn't take it seriously.
No, it doesn't seem like, and you know what I had heard? I had talked to a Cleveland writer back there, and they had said the biggest thing this franchise is looking for is they just want to see if he can take the job seriously, and it's clear that he can't. I mean, it's pretty apparent that this guy just isn't geared that way. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he's not geared that way. The New York Giants. The Giants have a pretty good job. Management, for the most part, stays out of the way. They let Coughlin obviously have a ton of rope. I've heard Sean Payton. I've heard David Shaw from Stanford. I've heard Josh McDaniels. A couple names getting thrown in for that New York Giants job. I don't know if you have any thoughts on who they might go after on that one.
You know, there's another one. If, you know, it's been talked about for most of the season, if not almost an entire year, about this being Sean Payton's last year in New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, that's a heck of a pedigree there as well. So do you put your franchise's fate in an unproven commodity?
Right, right. Or go with a guy who we know.
Or go with a guy who has been to and won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty good. And you would pair him up with Eli Manning, who, again, you would think, in all the situations we've seen, and I know Eli does some really, really dumb things, but there are times that I'm like, he doesn't have a ton of help. Now he's got some wide receivers. His offensive line is poor. His running backs have just started to get better. I would think that Sean Payton might be able to put him in a few more situations that he might be more successful. I have heard, and I don't know if this, I have heard Miami, of course, is interested in Sean Payton. I've heard, though, they're really interested in Todd Haley. That's one of their guys they're really looking at. How do these guys keep getting jobs? It makes no sense to me.
It's that might be one where, you know, Miami, they're not terrible.
No, they have talent.
They've got, you know, a good young quarterback.
I think.
He's got a good defense. Just ask Tom Brady.
Right.
That's an interesting situation. The fan base is poor.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting one. I don't have a feel for that one.
No, that's a hard one. You know what's funny is we sit there and you take a guy like Tom Coughlin and you say, okay, Coughlin's out. We're going to go get somebody better than Coughlin. And I look at Miami specifically and I say, ever since, and I'm not really comparing the two, but to a degree I am, ever since Miami got rid of Don Shula, they've been looking for his replacement ever since. Be careful, New York Giants, because you might be wishing you had Tom Coughlin back.
That, you know what, and that is why it was a little surprising, but you know what? There are franchises that would have let him go years ago.
Yeah, totally. They would have. It's a weird situation.
There's always the saying that sometimes the message gets stale.
Yeah, and you wonder if that's what it was, because there were so many games that right at the end, they found ways, inventive, creative ways to lose. Just bizarre. Hey, while we still have Mike, let's jump into Wild Card Weekend. Want to make a few picks for the upcoming games. We've got a different schedule this year. AFC playing this week on Saturday, NFC playing on Sunday. Let's take a look at these four games that we have for Wild Card Weekend. Kansas City goes to Houston to face the Texans. Kansas City's on a 10-game winning streak. They're winning with defense. They're winning with efficiency. They don't turn the ball over. Houston... Well, they play in the AFC South, so they kind of got in by default. Just because Indianapolis, Jacksonville, and Tennessee honestly should be relegated to like a minor league or something. Who do you like in Kansas City at Houston?
You know, here's the thing is you can always look at the playoffs. You can almost throw the records away because it's how you finish the season.
Sure.
Now, Kansas City, you mentioned it, has won 10 in a row. Looking at their last six games, of all the playoff teams, they've faced the weakest schedule in the last six games.
The record of the teams they've played in this 10-game winning streak is 67-93. They've played bad teams, and they've played bad teams closely.
Yeah, in the last six games, they haven't faced a playoff team yet.
No.
In the AFC, they're the only team that hasn't played a playoff team. That being said, I don't trust Houston's quarterback.
No.
I love Houston's defense.
Houston's defense is phenomenal, and they get such a good pass rush that I think they can stay in the game because of their defense. I just don't know that they can win the game.
I I'm right with you on that one. I think, you know, in the last couple months, the Texans have had one of the best defenses in the league. I just don't think Kansas City is more well-rounded.
Right.
Very good defense. They've got their offense rolling with their, third string running back.
Yeah, I think it's the third one now.
I think Kansas City goes in and wins and gets off the 24-year winless streak in the playoffs?
In the postseason? Yeah, that sounds about right.
I think it was 1993, the last. There's got to be players on the team that weren't even born yet.
Well, and that had to be a win with Montana when he had gone there.
You know what's interesting? Their last victory was at Houston.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to go the same way. I'm going to say that Houston's defense keeps them in it, but I think KC comes out of there with a win. The second game on Saturday, the Pittsburgh Steelers go to the Cincinnati Bengals. These two split the season series. And I think when you look at the scores of the season series, you kind of go, okay, that's kind of how the game has to go. Cincinnati won the game 16-10, and then Pittsburgh won the game 33-20. It kind of tells, that's kind of how this game has to go. Doesn't Cincinnati kind of have to win with their defense?
You know, you would think that Cincinnati has the better defense of the two teams, but there hasn't been a hotter offense in the last half part of the season since Roethlisberger's been back and healthy.
Right.
They're just scoring like crazy on everybody. Unfortunately, we found out that when Denver went there and fell asleep in the second half.
Sure.
And again, looking at the last six games of the regular season, Pittsburgh's faced three playoff teams.
Yeah.
They've had a tougher schedule.
They've had a tough schedule.
Teams are 4-2 in the last six games. Cincinnati hasn't faced nearly the schedule that Pittsburgh has.
No, they've basically faced one team.
Dalton, cast is off.
See, that scares me.
How healthy is that thumb? How cold is it going to be? There's a lot of factors there.
And how rusty is he going to be?
I honestly, I'd like to see Cincy and Dalton. I like the kid. I'd like to see him finally get their first playoff win. I think Pittsburgh goes in and wins.
Taking Pittsburgh, here's the one thing that I want to see, and we have seen this in the last few weeks with both teams. Which offense puts their defenses in bad situations? Because I think Cincinnati has the better defense. Obviously, Pittsburgh has the better offense, but that's strength against strength. Does either one of these teams turn it over at a bad time? I can't believe I'm saying this, but Ben Roethlisberger has had some really bad turnovers over the last few weeks. And again, we saw a horrible one in the Denver
game. Absolutely.
I'm going to take Cincy and go with defense over offense. So we're gonna split on this one. I will take Cincy. Mike has Pittsburgh. Let's go to the NFC games. Seattle at Minnesota. Love the way Minnesota is playing. Tough defense. They're physical. To me, it's kind of too bad you drew Seattle in this thing.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, a lot of people thought they should have lost the game to Green Bay, so they would be playing Washington instead.
Sure.
And
I understand it.
I agree. I think you're running into a buzzsaw. Seattle, gosh, one of the best teams in the last 3-4 years, are getting hot at the right time. They're 5-1 in their last six.
Russell Wilson is playing out of his mind. The best thing to ever happen to this team was Jimmy Graham getting hurt and going away. Because you can't use him. He can't block, and they don't throw to him. So they're trying to just jam this square peg into this round hole, and it hasn't fit.
And guess who's back?
Yeah. Yeah, beast mode might be back.
Yes. I'm taking Seattle.
Yeah, I'm going to take Seattle, too. I like what Minnesota did. I'll be honest. I'll be rooting for Minnesota just because I think it would be a great story. I just don't see any way that they're going to hang with Seattle, a team, that, again, that knows how to get it done in clutch times, and they're playing just – they might be playing the best football of anyone in the league right now.
On both sides of the ball, I agree.
I thought it was Arizona until last week, and we saw what happened there.
I don't know how much stock you put into that game, though.
Well, Arizona wasn't invested, for sure. They couldn't move either way.
Yeah. No offense against Carolina, I'd love to see a Seattle-Arizona matchup.
Oh, I know. I know.
Either it's the following week or the championship game, however it breaks out. But, oh, wow, what a game that will be.
It's been a fun season. Our last game we are going to pick, Green Bay loses and gets the it gets the punishment of going to Washington. I don't know how that works. Green Bay's struggling, though. Washington won the NFC East, which I guess is something. Green Bay helps themselves, actually, by losing to Minnesota on Sunday night. Now they get Washington instead of hosting Seattle. Who do you like, Green Bay at Washington?
I can't believe I'm saying this.
You're going to do the same thing I'm going to do. I already know.
I can't believe I'm saying this. Green Bay, the offensive line is horrible.
And he has no wide receivers.
He's been sacked like 62 times in the last 2 weeks. I'm exaggerating, of course, but my God, Arizona
killed him. Not by much.
Minnesota did the same thing. I'm taking Washington at home.
I'm taking Washington. You know who the best quarterback has been in the second half of the season?
Kirk Cousins. Killing it.
Seriously? He's been bizarrely very good. I'm taking Washington. I think they're going to win a playoff game. And doesn't it seem like every season we have this one team that gets in that you're like, man, we need to reseed this and change the way the playoff, you know, how you get in. And Washington shouldn't even be in. And that team ends up winning a game. I think of Seattle going back a few years ago. Against New Orleans. And it seems like that happens every year. I think it's going to happen again this year because I just think Green Bay has so many flaws to their game right now. Does it all go back to Denver exposing a lot of those flaws? It kind of seems like some of it does.
If you look at the timeline, they were rolling until Denver, you know, on that Sunday night game, just absolutely destroyed them. And they've been limping ever since. I think they finished 3-3 out of their last six. So
no, it's been brutal. Aaron Rodgers has no one to throw to. He has no one blocking for him, and his running back is fat, which doesn't help anything.
If Rodgers isn't one of the best mobile quarterbacks.
Oh, it's not even close.
They're in so much trouble.
They would be putrid right now because he has just absolutely saved them in game after game. Even in keeping them close in games that they've lost, there's still been plays that I look at and say, if they didn't have Aaron Rodgers, this game is a blowout and it isn't even close. He's carried that team.
Well, here's the thing. Think of the game at Detroit.
Oh, sure. I mean,
they shouldn't be in the playoffs.
No. No, because they absolutely should have lost that game. No, Aaron Rodgers has done a phenomenal job. It's bizarre, and no one's going to talk about it, but you can make a pretty good case based on this season how valuable Aaron Rodgers has been to that team, because if you plug any other kind of quarterback in there, Green Bay is going like 5-11, and that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He has definitely been the only reason they're in the playoffs.
Well, the sad part is I think Kirk Cousins is going to beat Aaron Rodgers, and that's going to be a sentence that we're going to say in the future in the playoffs, which is going to be very, very, very odd. It has been a fun season. It has been great to have you on the show, Mike. I appreciate you stopping by. We have to do this again a few times. Hey, I was going to ask you, because I meant to ask you this earlier. Did you go see the new Star Wars movie yet?
You know, I haven't. I'm not... never was a big Star Wars fan. I liked the original three. Never saw the three prequels.
You're not missing anything.
and that's what I keep hearing from people that really enjoy the series. I do want to see it in the theater. I think it's something that's definitely worth the experience in the theater versus seeing it at home. But I'll wait till the crowds die down and more than 50% of the audience isn't dressed up as a stormtrooper.
Well, I went and saw it last week. We went over and saw it. And there's a couple of things that stood out to me about it. Good movie. I'm checking my watch at most movies. I'm not going to lie. It gets in a little, and I'm like, okay, is this done yet? Because I didn't do that the whole movie. The whole movie, I was genuinely interested, enthralled with what was going on the screen. Very, very good. Couple things that stood out to me, though. For one, because it was a packed house. Like, we're there, and the theater is packed. The Star Wars crowd, like, I feel like I'm probably one of the dumber people in the crowd, for starters. But I also feel really, really tough. Like I feel like I can probably, hey, I can be the brawn in this theater.
It's like a Big Bang Theory reunion.
Totally. The nerds, it was amazing. If you would have seen some of the things that they were laughing about, and they're like, oh, R2-D2, he's so funny. And I was like, oh my, where am I at right now? It was so horrifying. And the other thing that stood out to me, and I'm not going to give a spoiler. I'm not going to give a spoiler, but I'm going to say this. Carrie Fisher, let's just say, never is really that surprised at anything because her face can't move. Her face is tighter than a drum. They're like, oh, here's something sad that's happened, and her face doesn't change. And she's like, oh, now I'm really happy. Face doesn't change. Now I'm really scared. Face doesn't change. That poor girl has shove so much stuff into her face, she can't move her face if her life depended on it.
Oh.
Brutal, brutal.
Well, I guess that's what you get when you're, rejuvenating a franchise from 1976 or
exactly.
Seven or
we're going to bring them back. Well, you're not going to bring back her face because her face is still frozen back in 1970. Anyways, Mike, thank you so much for joining the Daily Dose. I really, really do appreciate it. And we will have to get together and do this again sometime.
Anytime, Glenn. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, Mike and I talked about it. The Denver Broncos have a bit of a quarterback situation. Is it a quarterback controversy? I don't know. Both Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler, they're both saying the right things. And if there's anything I think that comes out of this, I've been very, very impressed with Brock Osweiler. I haven't been a huge Brock Osweiler fan. I've been impressed with the way he's carried himself and the way he's presented himself during all this. He gets benched on Sunday. They ask him, do you get benched? Do you feel bad about getting pulled when, you know, these turnovers weren't your fault? And he's, it's not about me. That was his answer. It's not about me. It's about the team. If it helps the team, I'm all for it. I give him a lot of credit. Peyton Manning doesn't want to be sitting on the sideline. He hasn't said that. He's, hey, I'm trying to help Brock in whatever way I can. I know the media has tried to present that Peyton Manning is bitter and he doesn't want to travel to games. That hasn't been how this has gone down. These guys are at least saying the right things. I know they want to start because if you're a quarterback at the level that these guys are playing at, I mean, you've been the stud in Little League. You've been the stud in high school. You've been the stud at your college. You've been your whole life, you've been the guy. And now you have another quarterback trying to take your job. It's not easy. These guys have been saying the right things. That's not always the case, though. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5, going to talk about some of those times when they've been a little nastier. Today's Daily Dose Top 5, the top 5 bitter quarterback controversies of all time. Number 5, you might remember this one. The Buffalo Bills in 1999. You know, in 1998, Rob Johnson was the starter. He was the starter going into 1999. In 98, the Bills had also brought in Doug Flutie. You remember Doug Flutie? He had won the Heisman. He had tried to get on with some teams in the NFL. It hadn't really worked. He had gone up and played in the CFL and had thrown all over the place and had a phenomenal career in the Canadian Football League, had won some titles, done some things, came back down to Buffalo and signed with the Bills. Now, the Bills were 4-1 in 99, and Rob Johnson gets hurt. Flutie comes on in relief of Johnson, and the Bills go 8-3 under Flutie. They make the playoffs. In the final game of the year, the Bills are going to play the Indianapolis Colts. It's a meaningless game. There's nothing to be gained from the Bills winning this game. And so they decide to rest all their starters. They rest Doug Flutie, and they put Johnson in. And Johnson does okay. He throws for almost 300 yards. He has a couple touchdowns. And they win the game. Based on that performance, head coach Wade Phillips decides Rob Johnson is going to be the starter in the playoff game next week. Flutie was furious. Felt that he hadn't done anything to lose the game. And he hadn't. He hadn't done anything to lose his starting position. Rob Johnson went in. They end up losing to the Tennessee Titans. Bills fans were mad. Flutie is still mad, I think. And you know, the Buffalo Bills haven't been back to the playoffs since. That's a long time. That's a long time. They still haven't been to the playoffs. They're not going this year either. Buffalo Bills in 1999. Quarterback controversy got a little bit ugly. Got a little bit bitter. Moving on to number 4. Number 4, the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1974. You know, Terry Bradshaw was the quarterback in 74. But in 74, there was a players walkout. There was a player strike. And while players were out, 11th round draft pick Joe Gilliam crossed the picket line. And when he crossed the picket line, he came in with Pittsburgh. And this was back when you played, 37 preseason games. The Steelers went 6-0 under Gilliam in the preseason. And then they started off the season. The players still hadn't reported. And the Steelers were 4-1-1 under Gilliam. When the players came back, Gilliam was demoted when the strike got settled. Bradshaw was put back up on top of the list. There were a number of people that looked at this and said, was this racially motivated? Was this a union bias because Gilliam crossed the lines? They didn't know exactly what it was. Gilliam ended up having a drug addiction problem, having all these problems. He was out of the league after just 1 year. And we know what Bradshaw did. He ended up leading the Steelers to 4 Super Bowls. But there was a lot of bitterness around the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1974 when Joe Gilliam got benched for Terry Bradshaw. Number 3 on our list, just back in 2008, not that long ago. You know, in 2005, Brett Favre started hinting to the Green Bay Packers, I think I might retire. In fact, there was a couple times he even announced he was going to retire. 2006, he did the same. 2007, he did the same. He just kept saying, yeah, I think I'm going to retire. I think I'm going to give it up. Well, in 2005, the Packers, thinking Favre, he's going to, you know, retire sometime. He kept saying he was going to. They decided they would draft Cal quarterback Aaron Rodgers. And Favre hated the pick. Hated the pick. Refused to help Rodgers at all when he came in the league. He always said, why would I help the guy that's going to take my job? So he never would help Rodgers. In 2008, Favre again had announced he was going to retire. And so the Packers, it's kind of started to move forward. Okay, Rodgers is our guy. At the last second, Favre says, no, I'm coming back. And the Packers said, okay, that's great, but you're the backup. We've already got everything installed for Aaron Rodgers. Favre got mad. He has to be traded. I certainly am not going to be a backup to this guy. So the Packers traded Brett Favre to the New York Jets for a 4th round pick. He bounced around to a few other teams. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers has obviously come on and had a phenomenal career of his own. Things in Green Bay, quarterback controversy there was not always friendly. Was a little bit bitter. Speaking of bitter, let's move on to number 2 on our list. The Dallas Cowboys in 1971. Now, this one's kind of weird. This one's kind of odd. In 1970, the Dallas Cowboys went to the Super Bowl. They lose it, I think it was Super Bowl 5 to the Colts, and Craig Morton had been their quarterback. But in 71, they had Roger Staubach. And Staubach and Morton both had phenomenal preseasons. Like, they both playing really, really well. So well, in fact, that head coach Tom Landry didn't know who to start. And he couldn't quite decide who to start. So what did he do? He didn't decide who to start. He alternated every game. He would start Morton, and then he would start Staubach. And then he would start Morton, and then he would start Staubach. And through the first 6 games, they were 4-2. And there was some grumbling. The quarterbacks didn't like it. The fans didn't like it. Pick a quarterback. Go with one guy. So Landry decided, I'm going to actually just alternate them on every single play of the game. And the Cowboys played the Bears. And he alternated them on every play. And I remember, this was before the radio headsets. He was having a quarterback on the sideline with him. He would tell him the play, hey, look for this and this and this, and then he'd send him in the game and bring the other. They were alternating every single play. And both quarterbacks hated it. In fact, Roger Staubach said that he thought maybe something had happened to Landry. He said, I didn't know if he had Alzheimer's or what, because it didn't make any sense. Both quarterbacks hated it. The Cowboys got beat by the Bears, and Landry finally was forced to make a decision. He went with Staubach. Staubach ended up taking the Cowboys to 5 Super Bowls, and he won 2 of them. That one was kind of ugly. Staubach and Morton ended up kind of having that bitter rivalry, too. They faced each other in the Super Bowl in 77. Our final one, our final bitter quarterback controversy. Now, understand this. I don't know if these players hated each other. I don't think that they did. They're both smart guys. This is more about the fan base bitterness, because the fan base hated this one. Our number one bitter quarterback controversy, just in 1992. You know, Joe Montana had led the San Francisco 49ers to 4 Super Bowls and had won all of them. But he was injured in 1991. He had hurt his elbow pretty significantly, and he missed a lot of time. Steve Young came in 91, and in 92, Steve Young was the starter. Montana was still battling some health issues. Young went 14-2 in 92. He was the NFL MVP, but the Niners lost in the NFC Championship to the Dallas Cowboys. Montana came back in 93, and was like, okay, I'm back. I'm ready to be the starter. Now, everyone's like, well, we don't know who the starter is going to be. Who should be the starter? Young is playing out of his mind. He had one of the highest quarterback ratings in NFL history. We went 14-2. Yes, we lost to the Cowboys. Whereas Montana supporters were saying, Montana doesn't lose to anybody. Dude's 4-0 in the Super Bowl. And in the Super Bowl, he's been nails. This guy just, all he does is win. How do you decide here? Fans hated it. fans were completely split. You were either a Montana guy or you were a Young guy. And there was a bitter rivalry there. In 93, the Niners finally ended up trading Joe Montana to the Chiefs. Some 49er fans are still mad. Montana went to the Chiefs. He was okay with the Chiefs. Steve Young ended up leading the San Francisco 49ers to a Super Bowl and having a phenomenal career once he was named the starter. But it was really, really bitter there for a while in San Francisco. There is our number one top five bitter quarterback controversies. Hey, next week on the show, we will be recapping NFL Wild Card Weekend. We will also be previewing the NFL Divisional Round. Going to be some really, really interesting games coming up. And we're going to have to recap the College Football National Championship game. We will also be taking a look back at the college football season. There's a couple things that I want to talk about happening in the college football season. A few of them we saw coming. Some of them were a little bit surprising. Plus, as we do every single week, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. You always got to stick around because you don't know what the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to bring you. If you get a chance, head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and a good review, just something simple. Doesn't have to be anything big. We would appreciate that so much. Have to say thanks to Mike and Castle Rock. I appreciate you being on the show. Also have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I really do appreciate it. Have a great week. I will see you all next week.